Before we start the Bhagavad Gita class, we first sing a song. It's called Jaya Radha Madhava. The reason why we do it is to wash away all contamination. You might have said, okay, we have just sung. But in Kali Yuga, the nature of things is that very quickly contamination comes into the mind again. Therefore, before we start the lecture, we first sing this song of Jaya Radha Madhava. After, I will give an explanation of what the meaning of the song is to both newcomers and a little bit more advanced people, devotees and aspiring devotees and guests. Welcome, all of you. So in this song, Jaya Radha Madhava, I'll explain it word by word so that we can have a better understanding of what we have just sung. After all, it's a strange language for most of you. And so Jaya means glory. Glory. To whom? To Radha Madhava. Glory. Glory. You know, glory. Radha is the biggest devotee of Lord Krishna. The Radha word comes from the Sanskrit Aradhyate. Aradhyate means intensified worship. There's nobody who is capable of worshipping Krishna better than Radharani. He's really the topmost devotee of Lord Krishna. And Radha, Madhava is another name of Krishna. The boy with the beautiful black hair. As you can see on the altar, he has black hair. One of Krishna's characteristics, beautiful black hair. So these we are worshipping today, Jaya, all honor to Radha Madhava. So Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari. So the word Kunj means has two meanings. Kunj it can mean on the banks of a river, like we will sit. We say later, Yamuna Tira. So they are sitting on the banks of the river Yamuna. And if they're not there, sometimes they're not there, they're not always there. Sometimes they're somewhere else. So Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari. It can also mean that they're in a castle or in a temple. Kunj means also temple or castle. In a big palace. That word is a palace. And sometimes they're in the palace, sometimes they're on the banks of the river Yamuna, and sometimes, like we'll see later, they're in the forest, Vanachari. So the main places where Radha and Krishna stay. Jaya Radha Madhava, Gopi Janavalabha is the next. Gopi Janavalabha. So word Gopi, go means here basically two things. Go means senses. The word means senses. Gopi. Go also means cows. And a gopi is somebody who is a coward boy. A coward boy. Or gopa. Can also be. So then the word jana. Jana means people. People in general. Gopi jana. So what happens? If you are one of the people that can follow the gopis, then gopi jana, valabha, the gopis become attracted to you. The word valabha means attraction. And if you can become a follower of the gopis, it means not only you have to be attracted to the cows, but you have to control your senses. Otherwise, you're not a real gopi. Not yet. You're not a Goswami yet. But you have to do some more practice. In this slide, it means both controlling the senses, your senses, and you have to like the cows. You cannot kill the cows and think to run after Krishna and the cows. It's not possible. Upijana Valabha, Giri Varadari. in die Varadari means Krishna who lives Govardhan Hill. There are special holy places in India, like in Vrindavan. And in the surroundings we have as Govardhan Hill. And Krishna is known as the lifter of Govardhan Hill. So what does it mean for us? We don't have to lift a Govardhan Hill. But it means that if we become a follower of the gopis, Krishna will become Girivaradari for us. He will lift mountains of obstacles for us. Because we know, if we cannot follow the gopis, then we create obstacles for ourselves. See? We have to become like a gopi, a follower of a gopi. And then only Krishna will lift all the obstacles that we have. We find in the pathway of devotional service. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadari. Yashoda Nandana is the next one. Yashoda Nandana. And the word Yashoda comes from the Sanskrit Yashaha. Yashaha means fame. Yeah. Well, Yashaha, where the word Yashoda comes from. Yashaha means fame. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So Yashaha means fame or honor. And Yashoda Nandana. Nandana means son. Son. So Krishna obviously is the son of Mother Yashoda. Yashoda Nandana. Braja Jana. Ranjana is the next one. Braj. The word Braj is a different. It means Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a one of the most holiest places on the planet. And Vraja Jana, Ranjana. So again you have the word Jana. Jana means people or followers of Vraj. Vraja Jana, Ranjana. And again Ranjana is a similar word that we saw. Ranjana also means attraction. Attraction to what? Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadari, Yashoda Nandana. If we give all honor, all fame to Mother Yashoda and to Lord Krishna, you see the result is that the inhabitants of Vrindavan will become attracted to us. Imagine that inhabitants of Vrindavan come attracted to us. And the price to pay for that is we have to worship the son of Mother Yashoda and Mother Yashoda herself. Then we will enter into that stage of pure bhakti. So then the last line, Yamunatira Vanachari. So that is obvious that Radha Madhava will stay on the banks of the Ramuna Yamuna and also sometimes in the forest. This is a short synopsis of the song means Jaya Radha Madhava. With this we can go to the verse from today. So it comes from Bhagavad Gita and I will take out my notes in case I forget something. Because I was looking at the verse and several things came into my mind. And I think it's better to write them down, otherwise you may forget them. So a little piece of paper to it. So we everybody has is the second chapter and verse 63. Sorry. Chapter 2, verse 63. I will first sing the verse. few times, and after we can repeat the verse. Whoever likes to repeat after me, then he can do. Krodat bhavati sammoham. I will first sing the verse, and then after you repeat. Prabhu?
Prabhu.
Shraddha bhavati sammoham, sammohat smriti. To come a little closer. Vibrahma smriti. Ramanat Budinasho Budinashat Panasyati Shraddhat Bhavati Samoha. You can repeat. Shraddhat Bhavati Samoha Samohat Sarvas Vibrahman Smriti Bramtat Budi Nasho Budi Nasha Pranasyati Shraddhat Bhavati Sammoham Sammohat Smriti Svi Brahman Smriti Brahmanat Budi Nasho. Budi Nashat Pranashyati. Somebody else? Sadat Bhavati Sammoham Sammohat Smriti Vibrahman Smriti Vamshat Budi Nasho Budi Nashat Pranashyati. Nobody else? It's not so difficult as you think. Okay. Word by word translation by His Holiness A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shraddhat. Repeat. Also, sorry. Krodat. From anger. Bhavati. Takes place. Samoha. Perfect illusion. Samohat. From illusion. Smriti. Of memory. Vibrama. Bewilderment. Smriti. Brahma, Brahmshat. After bewilderment of memory. Budi Nashaha. Loss of intelligence. Budi Nashat. And from loss of intelligence. Pranashyati. One falls down. Translation. From anger. Complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has given us this direction. Prapanchikanaya Buddhaya Hari Sambandhi Vastumam Bumuk Sva Parityago Vairagyam Falgu Karyane Karyate. Comes from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1258. By development of Krishna consciousness, one can know that everything has its use in the service of the Lord. Those who are without knowledge of Krishna consciousness artificially try to avoid material objects, and as a result, although they desire liberation from material bondage, they do not attain to the perfect stage of renunciation. Their so-called renunciation is called falgu, or less important. On the other hand, a person in Krishna consciousness knows how to use everything in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he does not become a victim of material consciousness. For example, for an impersonalist, the Lord or the Absolute, being impersonal, cannot eat. Whereas, an impersonalist tries to avoid good eatables, a devotee knows that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and that he eats all that is offered in him in devotion. So, after offering good eatables to the Lord, the devotee takes the remnants, called prasadam. Thus, everything becomes spiritualized, and there is no danger of a downfall. The devotee takes prasadam in Krishna consciousness, whereas the non-devotee rejects it as material. The impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life. Everybody wants to enjoy life. The impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life due to his artificial renunciation. And for this reason, a slight agitation of the mind pulls him down again into the pool of material existence. It is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. Om Jnanati Manandasya Jananjana Sarakaya Chakshur Mitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Daya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Narada Shri Vasari Gaura Vakshavrimam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So the you can say the central point in this verse is basically the first word, and it is krodha, or anger. So, namely, if you can avoid anger, if you can, sorry, 263, if you can avoid anger, then you can avoid the whole chain which comes afterwards. You will not be in delusion. You will not be bewildered. You will not be. Your memory will be okay. Your intelligence also will be sound. And you will not fall into the material pool. So, yes, anger is really something if you can avoid this. And I have written some notes about anger and how to avoid it. So I will. We try to discuss this. So first, the book that I'm reading from, Bhagavad Gita, and the Vedic scriptures, are special books who give us proper knowledge. There is no speculation in these books. They're actually true knowledge that everybody nowadays is searching on the network. The network, internet, the big thing nowadays. There's so much knowledge on the internet. Incredible amount of knowledge out there, just on the fingertip. But one has to analyze if this knowledge is true or not, if it is really true knowledge. And sometimes it's hard to find out what to believe and what not. Because if you look up the word Krishna, there may be 100 million statements about it. And who knows what is what? You have to be an expert. And so this whole literature, like Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam is also considered like parampara. The meaning of this is that it's a system that a spiritual master speaks this knowledge to his disciples, who become qualified and able to also present this knowledge as it is learned from the spiritual master. And therefore this knowledge doesn't become affected by illusion or bewilderment. And if you can see what the meaning of network, or one meaning, it consists of seven letters, isn't it? Network. And actually, N, we can say, represents nothing. The E stands for else, nothing else. The T stands for then, and two, nothing else than two. W for words, and the O for, let me see what I wrote down. I forgot to write it down. But it's off. It's nothing else than two words off. You have the R, real, and the K, knowledge. So network, nothing else than two words of real knowledge. What was that? Network. And so there are many things that are related to anger. And it came to my mind that a thing like revenge, it can continue like generation after generation, you know, that somebody has done wrong to you, and therefore you're angry at that person, and you want to take revenge. And this revenge, you see, in the world going on all the time, you know, whether on a familiar level, or on a national level, political level, economic level, on all kinds of levels, you know. If people don't like something, and when their ego is too strong, then they want to take revenge upon you, isn't it? And this just continues, you know, life after life, life after life, life after life. And for you it means reincarnation. Again, you have to come back to work out this anger that you had in your previous life, and come to the terms with other people, and first come to the terms with yourself. Because if you cannot come to the terms with yourself, how can you come to the terms with other people? It is not wrong to love yourself. And if you're properly situated, it is not wrong to love yourself. Because the basis in self-love, then only if you love yourself, your soul sufficiently, then you won't feel the need for hatred. You don't feel the need for anger. You don't feel the need for all these things. You can't come to the terms with people. And it's a very nice story in this regard, that by one sage, he had many disciples sitting around him, and so he asked all his disciples after the true meaning of the word anger, and you know, they all gave like different answers, but the sage wasn't satisfied with the answer, and he asked one question to the disciples, that why is it? Why is it that if you are angry at somebody, you shout at somebody, he may sit next to you, you know, and still you shout at him. So what is the reason? He's not deaf, he can hear you very well. So what's the reason he shouts at you? And this sage gave a very nice answer. He says that because he shouts at you because your hearts are very much separated. Your hearts are very much separated from each other if you're angry with each other. Isn't it? And the louder you shout, the more you are separated. The more angry you are, the more separation from heart there is. Yeah? And if you see that people who like each other, they sit next to each other, they don't shout at each other. They speak in a gentle voice. And if you like each other more, then you will whisper at each other. Sweet words. And maybe the top Moses like that you don't have to speak to each other at all. You look at each other and you understand each other. And the question of anger is completely, you know, say ridiculous, because you are at such a level from heart-to-heart connection that you are able to kick out that anger, you know, maybe for good. You know. Although Kali Yuga is a dangerous age. I can never say for good. It can always come up. Yeah? But the thing is that one has to establish a basis of a heart-to-heart connection. And that is one of the, you can say, meanings of bhakti yoga. Yeah? Because Krishna consciousness, another word for that is bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. So to everybody, you have to, you know, get a heart-to-heart connection, isn't it? Many people I see coming in the temple, especially Hinduistic people, they always come like this, you know, when they meet you. You know, because they point to the heart, and I find that very, very nice. You know. When it gives me a good feeling, you know, then I'm inclined also to do when I see them, I also do the same back. You know, because Krishna is also in our heart, and we have that connection. From that we make the connection, proper connection, between Krishna and all other living entities. Because all the living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. Nobody excluded. It doesn't matter how, if you're ugly or pretty or a man or a woman or a child or you know, misformed or whatever. High EQ, low EQ, high AQ, that what we have, an IQ, an EQ and an SQ nowadays. Formerly it was only an IQ, intelligence coefficient, but now you have emotional coefficient and also spiritual coefficient. But even that doesn't matter. You know. You have to recognize who's inside is here in the heart. That's us as our true nature, the soul. And from that we make connection, heart to heart. Another thing that is also connected with anger, like criticism. People who like to criticize. You know. And it may not be so loud, outspoken, but it may like gossip, quarrel, all day long, you know. Look at him, look at his wife and this and their son and this, has done it like this and the whole thing going on. And some people, they quarrel like this, like for 70-80% of the day, you know. They speak like this about others. And his criticism is, you can say, a subtle form of anger, isn't it? Subtle form of anger. We may think we're not really angry, but the thing is that if you're really positively disposed to somebody, you don't like to speak like this. You know, always this gossip, you know, going around, nobody, it serves nobody actually, you know, this gossip. And the thing is that the truth about somebody gets distorted also. That somebody heard something from somebody and said, what about him? He has done this. Oh, no, that cannot be. Yes, he did. And then this person tells it to somebody else who distorts it a little bit. So the truth, if it is true or not, becomes already distorted. And so at the end, you end up with a completely different story. And if the person hears the story, he's saying, what is this? You know? I am not like that. Who speaks like this? And he in return may also get, you know, revengeful or something. What is the criticism, you know? Why me, you know? To pick out me again. And I didn't do much, you know. They criticized me. And another thing that is connected is if you become angry, there are always certain expectations. Mm-hmm. And my spiritual master always said that the best expectation you can have is no expectation. No expectation, no. And then whatever comes to you, you can tolerate. You can tolerate. Yeah. Even if it's a so-called offense or insult. But you will be able to tolerate it. Because the thing is that when most people meet each other, they have certain expectations. What will happen, you know, who is he? And what can I expect of him? You know. It doesn't matter which level. You know, maybe some money, you know. Oh, if I meet my uncle, you know, he will give me always money, you know. When I go to them, or my father, my grandfather, you know, I've got some money. If I visit them again, I will get some money, you know. And then one day he doesn't give money. Say, what's wrong with him, you know? Today he didn't give anything, you know. I ask him, try to find out why he hasn't given me Lakshmi. You know. What kind of an uncle is this? You know? He didn't give me. So, always certain expectations, and then, you know, then if the expectations are not fulfilled, you become angry at someone at a certain point, isn't it? That in the past he has done this, always for me, and now suddenly he stops doing this, whatever it is. and like some positive way to be disposed towards anger, tolerance we have seen to be tolerant, and related to that is to be, you have to remember maybe the three C's, you have to be cool, calm and composed. How is that? Cool, calm and composed. Composed means also that you have a good knowledge of, you know, of things, how to avoid anger that you already know, already have in your mind, that you will not allow yourself to be disturbed. And this is also a factor in Kali Yuga, you know. It's full of disturbance. There are problems everywhere. This age of Kali Yuga is considered to be an ocean of problems. And you try to solve one problem, and you create 10 other problems. This is the nature of Kali Yuga. Fortunately, we gradually we move out of Kali Yuga. Not for nothing that there are so many esoteric movements nowadays, yoga clubs, new age sites, and then all these things. You know. It gives a sign, and also in the world, people are revolting, you know, in all countries. They don't want these dictators anymore, these leaders, these politicians, and the whole economic system, financial system, didn't work from the very start. Nobody believed in the euro from the very start. But still they push it through in order to satisfy their egos. You know? So where were we? This is the situation nowadays of the society of Kali Yuga is full of disturbance, and if it is full of disturbance, you will catch that vibration in your mind, isn't it? You will catch that vibration. And it means that you have a bigger chance to become agitated. And agitation means basically if something else happens, then you get angry, you know. There's a whole, the atmosphere of the earth is surrounded by all kinds of bad vibrations. Fortunately, that is changing gradually. Yeah, so that we will have less problem with our mind to attach to to spiritual consciousness. And so tolerance is important. One simple thing you can do, maybe, that if you feel angry, you take a cool shower. A cool shower, you're very angry, because you're like, from the head, here a lot of anger comes from here, you know, on this. Comes from here as if, you know, as if coming from the third eye or something. It's a spot here. It's like a basis of anger. You have to work it out here. It's here in the head, you know. Right. And then, so there's another story related to anger, and it's of Alexander the Great. Everybody must have heard of Alexander the Great, the great emperor who liked to conquer the whole world. And so it came to be that one day he went also to India, and he went to Vrindavan. I don't know if it's a true story. Tell you. So we came to Vrindavan, and he saw many ashrams there, sages sitting there. And so we became interested. He became interested in these sages, you know, what are these people? And then he said to one servant that announced that I'm here, you know, I'm the king, the great Alexander. I will not go myself to the ashram, but I will tell one of my servants to go and say that I'm here. So if he wants, he can see me. So one of his servants went to the ashram, and he spoke with the sage. And the sage said to him that if the king wants to come, then he can see me, he can come to me. So the servant went back to Alexander the Great and said that sage is not coming, you will have to come to him. And then Alexander, he got a little disturbed, you know, I'm an emperor, you know, I'm conquering the whole world. What for? You know? No, he said, no. That he sent his disciple, his servant, back to the sage, and he said, he doesn't want to, come to you, but you have to come to him. He said, well, Alexander again, he got more disturbed, more angry. And so the it continues that to the point that you know the here again the anger comes in, of course, and the sage said that to him, to his servant, that you know, see, he says, the servant of the servant wants to come to me. He said like that, the sage said, the servant of the servant wants to come to me, thinking that the servant of the servant is the emperor. You know? That the messenger went back to the king and said to him, he said, the sage said that the servant of the servant, you know, can come to me. Servant of the servant, he became so angry. Personally, he rushed to the sage and with a sword. He couldn't control his anger anymore. With a sword, he ran to the sage. And he was ready to sever his head from his body. But the sage saw it all coming. And he ran completely, like the three seas, cool, calm and composed. And he didn't react at all. And upon seeing this, so the emperor became impressed. But how? How was this possible? You know, I'm on the verge of slashing him with my sword. He captivating him. But he was like this. But the sage didn't budge an inch. You know. He didn't budge at all. King became impressed and he asked the sage, so how? I'm on the verge of nearly killing you. You're not disturbed at all. How was this? And the sage said that, yes, king, anger is my servant. Anger is my servant. And with you is the opposite. The opposite. You have become the servant of your anger. While me, I've made anger my servant. So then, I think the end was that the great, I don't know if he, in the story, if the great emperor went to an ashram or not. Certainly he made a big impression. You know. Let's see if there is something else. Otherwise, we can conclude the lecture. So, it is also, it is important, you know, to what I've noted down also, to develop an equilibrium of the mind. That is, not too far this way, not too far that way. The risk is that you become angry if the mind is not in equilibrium. Like the verse in Bhagavad Gita, 2:14. Problems that are coming to you, like it's like summer and winter, like the agitation of the senses, you have to tolerate, and don't become disturbed by it, like you have to tolerate the summer and the winter. In the summer in India, it can be extremely hot, you know, here, what is not very much, but in India, you know. In May, if you are in May, the month of May in India, at many places, you almost cannot tolerate, you know, the heat. You have to sleep in the for 2 hours in the afternoon. You cannot get to do much after 3 o'clock, till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And also in the winter here, it can be very cold, you know, like Scandinavia, you know. there's the highest percentage of suicide there, because it is winter, it is dark, 8, 9, 10 months in the year, it is like that. So that we have to try to tolerate by developing an equilibrium in the mind. And therefore, if you have an equilibrium in the mind, then you're not apt so much to become angry to anybody. So then I will conclude the lecture by there is a quote in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, the 11th chapter is there. That was also spoken about anger. And this is the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Because I think it was his brother who was attacked, wasn't his brother, by the Yakshas. Yeah. And so he couldn't tolerate that. He was fighting the Yakshas all the time, you know. Yakshas fighting, he couldn't be satisfied that all the Yakshas would be killed. And Swayambhuva Manu, one of the big sons of Lord Brahma, he thinks this is going too far, this is too much, so I better do something about it. And then he said that, please, what's his name now, Dhruva Maharaj, please stop this, you know, and point your attention to Lord Krishna. He said two things, that point your attention to Lord Krishna. Look at Lord Krishna, you know. Don't look at these yakshas all the time. Don't take revenge. Don't stop being angry. And he also said that engage yourself. What is the essence? The essence of that engage yourself in the devotional service of Lord Krishna. Then, because you will lose also the concept of I and mine. You will not think yourself, you know, to be the owner and the enjoyer. And the center of things, then you will lose the interest for that. And we can become engaged in bhakti yoga. And by bhakti yoga, the mind becomes naturally in a state of equilibrium, you know, because it will be suited, it will have nice feelings. And at the further stage, there will be no more question of mind. You know, you won't feel the mind anymore. You know. Like my Guru Maharaj, you know, he was born in Gujarat in a devotional family, and everything was so peaceful and so undisturbed. Although in his house there were 25 members, you know, 25 members, and but nobody was became ever angry at each other, you know, because in like a Vedic tradition, everybody was satisfied with natural life. There was no question there of television. There was one person who had a radio in the whole village. One person. So my Guru Maharaj, he wanted to find out what is this radio. He was a small boy, and then they were discussing about it, and it was radio. Oh yeah, they came to the conclusion that something is speaking out of that machine. You know, somebody is speaking in that machine. They're speaking something to us. You know. Yeah, and so maybe to finalize, because we go. A little bit over the purpose of Srila Prabhupada, because that is, of course, important. And that basically he says that unless you are in the service of Lord Krishna, it's very hard, you know, to develop detachment from anger. Because even those who are trying, without the service of Krishna, at one point, they rise up, even Prabhupada says, to the level of liberation. You may even go that far, but like if some beautiful woman comes along, you know, and tingles her ankle bells, then nearly all of these impersonalists they fall prey to that woman, you know, or something else. You know, it may disturb them easily, and the equilibrium of their mind is like artificial. They have developed a kind of equilibrium of the mind, a kind of a neutrality towards persons and situations. But that neutrality is not very strongly based. It can only be strongly based if you have a true attraction for Lord Krishna and his service and his devotees. That's strongly based, because that will give you the higher taste. And that Prabhupada speaks of the higher taste. And you will not fall prey so easily to emotions like anger and hatred and bewilderment. There it says here, from anger, complete delusion arises. Complete delusion. So there's a little difference between when we hear the word delusion, we think of illusion. Isn't it? The difference is that delusion is something like you know, you have fallen prey to something, but you know that there is some higher thing, some higher purpose, that there is some superior argument. Whereas in illusion, you are in illusion, you don't know what's really happening. You know that there is something better, something superior. But delusion, when you are deluded by something, you know that something better is there, Krishna consciousness is better, is still, you're deluded, you know. And then your memory becomes bewildered. You cannot remember, you know, verses anymore from the Bhagavad Gita. It's hard. You're just stuck in that delusion because you're angry. Anger cuts off your pathway to devotional service. You know? And as a result of that, your intelligence is lost. And when your intelligence is lost, you fall down in the material whirlpool, in the material existence. So, thank you very much for listening. These were some quotes I could find that came into my mind about anger. Hare Krishna, and maybe we have some questions or remarks. Hare Krishna. No questions? No questions? No, can I ask? Okay. Thank you very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.